Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
I want to turn first this morning, though, to the Low Pay Commission, which is expected to recommend an increase in the national minimum wage of 80 cent an hour. That'll go from €12.70 up to €13.50 an hour ahead of this year's budget. If indeed the government agree it and adopt it, it would mean a pay increase of 6.3% from January the 1st for the lowest paid workers in the economy. To give their reactions, I'm joined by Suzanne Rogers, Research and Policy Analyst at Social Justice Ireland, and by Neil MacDonald, CEO of the Irish Small and Medium Enterprise Association. Good morning to both of you. Neil, can I begin with you first, please? Possibly 80 cents. We don't have confirmation of this yet, but our research suggests that it is going to be in the region of 80 cents for the lowest paid workers. What's your reaction to that?
It's still, I know people will say 80 cents, is that it? The difficulty is that is, as you say in your intro, 6.3% increase at a time when inflation in the state is running at 2.2%. So it's almost three times the rate of inflation. And it follows a very, very significant adjustment in the minimum wage this year at 12.4%.
I know, but so the objective here, Neil, is not to stay abreast of or ahead of inflation. It is to get the national minimum wage to a point where it would be 60% of the median hourly wage. Is that not a worthwhile objective?
Well, we understand that that's the objective, but we have all along had a very major difficulty with that objective because Ireland is unusual in the business demographic we have because of the 2.6 million odd workers in the country. 49% of them, effectively half of them, either work for a multinational or for the state and have pay rates very significantly ahead of pay rates of people in the private sector. So benchmarking the private sector against that, you know, the multinational, the FANG companies and the Magnificent Seven and workers for the state, it's not going to be a benchmark that a lot of companies are going to be able to reach. So we think it's ultimately going to result in is a lot of people working reduced hours or losing their jobs altogether in the case of those restaurants that have shut in Dublin during the week.
It's still a fairly modest sum of money to employees, though. For a 39-hour week, it would imply an increase from £495 a week to £526 a week. Is that not sustainable?
That's always what is said. This is really small. Can't you just pay it? I had a retailer from the west of Ireland contact me this morning and say, across my wage bill for 2025, that's going to cost an extra €35,000. He's selling groceries to the likes of you and me, and you know how that's going to be recovered, Philip. So, pushing these labour rate adjustments at three times the rate of inflation through the system is ultimately going to cost all of us. And then we're told the following year, well, our minimum wage isn't great on purchasing power parity terms. In Ireland, unfortunately, Philip, the wage level is not the problem. It's costs that are the problem, our extraordinarily high rents and our extraordinarily high costs of buying property. And like it or not, Philip, employers, especially small ones, are not going to be able to solve that problem.
Suzanne Rogers, 6.3%. It is, as he says, ahead of inflation. It's ahead of growth rates, and it comes on top of 12.4% increase to the minimum wage last year. Is too much being asked of employers?
I would echo, I think, that point that your income is really only useful as an indicator of living standards in relation to what your income can buy. So when we look at the percentages of inflation, and I appreciate again that in this year inflation is slowing, but prices haven't reduced. Every single person working for this show, the people you're talking to, everybody who's listening to the show, is going around the supermarket. The prices of goods on the shelves haven't dropped. their utility bills haven't dropped, if they're fortunate enough to have a car, going to the petrol pump and filling the car. Like, none of our outgoings have dropped. And it's absolutely that point that if we look to see how far a minimum wage has to go, what it needs to provide, if there are things that can be done to reduce costs, like housing, that's a massive part of this conversation. If we were able to deliver on an adequate housing programme, you know, some form of low-income, affordable, social public housing system, we would be having a very, very different conversation about minimum wage. But ultimately, this is about, I go to work for 40 hours or 35 hours a week. At the end of that week, can I afford to the basics? And unfortunately, with these kind of figures, the answer will always be no.
Neil, it doesn't sound like much to ask for, really, does it? I mean, you're saying that costs for your members are not going down, but the point that Suzanne makes is equally valid. Cost of living for employees is also not going down.
That's absolutely true, Philip, and I acknowledge what Susanna has said on behalf of the lower paid. Unfortunately, though, we take the logical hops or illogical rather hop, skip and jump from that position to say that fixing the cost of living and the cost of housing and the cost of rent is the employer's issue to fix, and unfortunately it isn't. Unfortunately, trying to fix the cost of living issue via increases in the minimum wage is like trying to fix a leaky bucket with more water. At a certain point, this just stops. At a certain point, people start losing their jobs. And at a certain point, the economy tips into recession. We're at full employment now, so those people who are losing their jobs in parts of the hospitality sector hopefully get re-employed quite quickly. But we're seeing a different story on the far side of the Atlantic. So we really have to be careful that we don't continually push prices to the point where we just can't afford to pay them anymore and we tip into recession.
Suzanne, does he have a point? There are other tools in the toolbox that should be used to address cost of living rather than wages.
Till we get to that point, unfortunately, you know, it is going to be about putting money back in people's pockets. And when we look at the Central Statistics Office survey on income and living conditions, the recent publication, we have a number of people who are in work who are not reaching the poverty line. So like that speaks volumes that you're going out to work and you're still coming in, or like 12.3% are, you know, living in deprived situations, 5.8% at risk of poverty. Like, to go to work was always the answer to poverty. You know, if you do not have enough to be able to provide for the basics, the job is always the answer. And if the job doesn't provide that, then, you know, really questions really, I think, need to be asked. And I think government already subsidised low wages, because we're looking at things like housing assistance payment, access to medical cards, access to family income supplements. There's already a lot being done in the background to supplement people who are on low incomes.
It's a fair point, really, isn't it, Neil? If your business model means that you have to pay people below the poverty line, then you've really no business being in business at all.
Well, Philip, if we're at a point where we're saying that employers are responsible are solely responsible, despite the supports Suzanne referred to, for addressing everyone's cost of living, let's put it this way. The current minimum wage equates to about 2,100 euros a month, and the current average rent is about 1,840 euros a month. So you would spend 85% of your minimum wage just covering the rent. If you doubled it, you'd still be paying about half. If we had the living wage that Social Justice Ireland and others are talking about, around 14.50 euros, the current monthly rent would still absorb three quarters of your monthly pay. I repeat it for the third time, Philip. It is not the job of employers to address an out of control cost situation.
I don't dispute the numbers that you put out there, but it's not an answer to my question. My question was, if I am running a business and I am paying myself a wage, a living wage out of that business, but in order to stay in business, I have to continue to pay people below the poverty line, that's wrong, isn't it?
Well, the poverty line is a statement of relative income, and I don't know where those figures that Suzanne is quoting are coming from. I can tell you that Ireland has the second highest minimum wage in Europe, but unfortunately it is in first place with Denmark in having the highest prices in Europe. And what we're simply saying is if we continue to try and chase that, what is effectively a supply of accommodation problem in Ireland by raising wages, we are never going to get there, because all that's going to happen as you increase wages is rents and the cost of housing are going to go up, and we will never solve the problem. We're actually trying to fix the problem, Philip.
So does that mean this objective of by 2026 securing a minimum wage that would be the equivalent of 60% of the median hourly income is something that you're just not going to be able to cooperate with?
It's not that we're not going to cooperate with it, Philip. If it's the law, we'll do it. What we're saying, though, is the project is bound to fail. And that's why you're seeing multinationals, huge companies like Ryanair buying estates and swords, and employers like Supermax buying houses and apartments. Employers now realise that the cause of wage pressure in this state is lack of access to affordable housing. They're doing their best by literally buying housing for their employees.
What we're saying
is that this effort to increase the minimum wage to address an out of control cost of living is unfortunately
as you've said, explain to me, what does failure look like?
Failure looks like what this will actually result in, and even the ESRI has acknowledged this in a January 2022 report on the 10% movement in the minimum wage over 3 years. What failure looks like is it's not big bang. What it results in is reduced hours in the beginning, workers going from a 39 to a 34, 32 hour week, and then ultimately job loss, business closure, as you've seen in hundreds of hospitals.
And is another word for business closure not unsustainable businesses going out of business?
Well, if you make a business unsustainable by altering its cost base to the extent that customers refuse to pay higher prices, well, then call it unsustainable. I mean, that's... whatever you choose to call it, Philip. But what we're saying is that this is an avoidable crisis. We have to address what is the proximate cause of this, which is prices specifically, or most importantly for housing and energy, that are too high.
Suzanne Rogers, do you accept what he is saying here, and that the unintended consequence of trying to raise everybody to a living wage by 2026 could actually result in reduced hours for people and jobs being lost because businesses go to the wall?
We've had an issue with the working poor for a lot longer than the current cost of living, I'll say crisis because I have to. So this is a long problem. This isn't necessarily, and this predates, I think Ireland has always had an issue with housing. But the alternative then is to say, no, we won't increase minimum wage. We will condemn hundreds of thousands of people who are working. And I have done these low and broad skill jobs. They're a lot harder than what I'm doing now at the moment, which is sitting on the phone talking to you. These are hard jobs. To work 40 hours a week and to be under that poverty line is really what we're saying. And so I think it predates a lot of what we're seeing at the moment. But we had the same uproar with women entering the workforce. It was going to result in all kinds of, weird and wonderful things, an inward migration entering the workforce. And what we can actually see is, as a result of women and migrants in the workforce, they have been directly responsible for our post-pandemic bounce back. So putting money in the pockets of people who are going to work every week, surely I would have thought that makes economic sense.
Right. We have a statement from the Department of Trade, Enterprise and Employment who say that recommendations from the Low Pay Commission are considered by government in the context of the budget, which I suppose you could interpret as meaning that this is not cast in stone. So both Neil MacDonald and Suzanne Rogers, you have a job of lobbying to go and do before budget day. Thank you both very much for talking to us this morning.